Let's bring in Dan Murphy into the conversation. I don't know what you felt, you know, watching the Patrick Ewing frozen envelope way back when. Are we? What do you think what we saw today?
Mythbusters, maybe they could do it too. You know what? I am just so pleased that it wasn't the Oilers. So I don't care if it was rigged. In fact, I hope it was, just so we didn't have that outcome. But if you're ranking the potential outcomes, I think this is probably third best in my mind. A team that likely wasn't going to be in the playoffs, a team that was going to be in the lottery anyway. Did they deserve the first overall pick? You know, it's kind of a crazy setup, but everybody agreed to it. But I'm happy. I think probably I would have said Florida, Mini, and then like maybe New York and Nashville tied in my mind. So I was not upset with the outcome. It could have been a lot worse in my mind.
Well, I mean, okay, so as far as the world burning, had Toronto won, it would have been absolutely insane. But as far as a content perspective from the media's angle on this,
yeah,
at least you're out. But could you imagine, Murph, had they won the lottery and the type of content you would have been seeing for the next few months?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what would have been worse. Maybe the people on the West Coast are like me and would rather Edmonton be the one team that didn't get it. But you're right. I mean, we see the amount of content that has followed Austin Matthews around, and much of it for good reason, obviously. But if we were looking at Lafreniere and where he's going to play leading up to the Leafs camp and going to Leafs camp and, you know, the second savior, it would have been, you know, vomit-inducing, I think, for the most part. So I think this is relatively fair. This is a rather benign outcome compared to the chaos that could have ensued if it was Toronto or Edmonton or even Pittsburgh, for that matter, at this point. So, if Toronto had gotten that pick, I mean, good gracious, because they should be sitting on this result that they just had, and they should be eating it for a little while considering the way they went out. And for them to have lucked into the top player in the draft the next day, I'm not sure that would have been poetic justice. So I'm rather pleased of how it all went down.
Dan Murphy joins us on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. So, yeah, easy, quick question. How much of a chance, how much of a puncher's chance do you give the Vancouver Canucks against the Stanley Cup champions?
Well, I mean, I did two of the Blues games when I was in Edmonton. You know, they looked much better against the Golden Knights than they did against Colorado in the two games that I did. But you could tell those teams in the round robin, the interest level just was not the same as the qualifiers. You know, even after, like, going into the first of the round robin games, they're saying stuff like, these aren't do or die. Yes, we'd like to win top seed, but the grand scheme of things, we want to stay healthy, and we want to be able to hit the ground running once the real playoffs start. I think that Dallas likely would still have been a better opponent for Vancouver, considering the way they played, can't score, not sure about a couple of their best players. But I'll say this, I'd rather the Canucks be playing St. Louis now than have the season continued on without COVID, because the Blues were just starting to be a wrecking ball again at that time. They were rolling. They were looked like the best team in the league again. And certainly they have not looked like that since the exhibition game into their three round robin games. So I will say I'll give the Canucks much more of a puncher's chance now than had the season not been paused. But I still think it's a very tough out for Vancouver, regardless of how they've played, in the round robin format. The goaltender is still good. Their forward depth is good, and their defense is big and heavy. They could be very punishing on Vancouver. So, puncher's chance. I'm looking at all the models, analytics, and most of them have, you know, the Blues is, you know, 55-45 or a little higher than that. So, certainly, Jacob Markstrom and his teammates are capable of winning the series. I'm just not sure how much money I would put down on that for it to happen.
I mean, it could very well be. It could get to the point, Murph, where it is a bit of a coin flip between these two teams. And the biggest question is essentially going to come down to, I mean, goaltending is a big part, but how much intensity can the Blues conjure up? And we've heard different things about their mindset heading into the bubble than also what they've been thinking so far. And as much as, yeah, in theory, they should be able to get up for a playoff round, it's also not easy to flip the switch. But focusing on the Canucks for a second, because we don't know what the Blues are going to do until we get to game one. But what the Canucks have done so far, and I was talking to some people around the team, and one thing they've been really impressed by, and I wanted to get your sense of this too, and I know it's different, Murph, because you can't be as around the team in the bubble the way you normally are under these circumstances. But a lot of people are saying these guys have a real strong will to win, and the guys who have been part of other playoff teams, they see the focus with these guys. Hey, it doesn't mean they're going to go out and beat the Blues, but it really seems like they have come together for a common cause, and they have that mentality as a group that you need as a unit if you are going to do anything come playoff time.
Yeah, and I'll address that in a second. Just back to the Blues for one moment. I think everybody wondered about teams flipping the switch, and the teams in the qualifiers sure didn't seem like they had a problem getting that intensity up right from the get-go. I know the Canucks lost game one, but the intensity was high from the opening puck drop, and perhaps as high as we've seen it all season long with that team. So I fully expect the Blues, maybe they won't be playing their best hockey, so to speak, but I certainly expect the intensity to be there and the battle to be there from the defending champs. As for the Canucks, you're right. I mean, I think this the series win over Minnesota gives them belief. You know, the way they won those games, they were seen as a team that was inferior at 5-on-5, inferior defensively, and I think they were every bit as good as well, and better in those areas. So whatever adjustments Travis Green and staff made in those areas certainly paid off against Minnesota, because I really thought that was a not a great matchup for Vancouver, to be honest. They're much more structurally sound defensively than the Blues have looked. So, yeah, I mean, the Canucks, obviously, when you win a series like that and you have young players that have not been, you know, through it before, whether it's a play-in or series or a qualifying series, it still felt like a playoff series to me. And now they have one of their belt, and they've got a win. Your goaltender, who was your, you know, best player in the regular season, wasn't necessarily your best player in this play-in series. So that can give you more belief as well, saying we don't have to have him stand on his head for us to win every single game. So I think you're right. And if players like Pearson and Toffoli and JT Miller are saying that the focus looks like it is where it needs to be, and like where they've seen, you know, their teams go, you know, with JT Miller to a cup final a couple times, and of course all the way for Pearson and Toffoli, then I think you kind of have to believe them at this point.
Dan Murphy joins us here on the program. Andrew Walker, Sat Shaw. Who most impressed you for the Canucks in this series? Who was their, well, MVP, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Quinn Hughes got better as it went along, and I really think like he was excellent, and I think he was great in you know, in a way that he didn't seem to take a lot of chances. We didn't see, you know, we saw a lot more end to end rushes with Quinn Hughes in the regular season. We saw him, you know, far more zone entries than perhaps we saw in this, because I think he really wanted to stay on the right side of the puck and not make any turnovers or errors. So I thought that he was excellent that way and got better as the series went along. You know, and that was impressive to me. I thought Brock Besser looked determined, which probably shouldn't be a surprise considering, you know, that's who we talked about mostly throughout the training camp. And I thought, you know, him and his linemates in the top line were, I'm not going to say dominant, but very good in control play where they were on the ice. So I think the guys that had to be the best players that you were expecting to be were, and that's obviously a good sign for Vancouver as well.
So how far away, if you had to guess, do you think Toffoli is from playing? Do you think we might see him against the Blues, or do you think it might be longer?
I don't know. It seems to be like sometimes, you know, when you're around the team, you can glean information. I mean, you travel with them, you see what's going on. Like, we're not within, you know, when I was in the rink, I'm not within 70 yards of them, and that's when I'm up in the broadcast booth and they're on the ice. So we haven't come close to seeing the players. It's been very quiet when you're trying to get some information, and I really have absolutely no idea. I mean, I know that there were reports of him in a walking boot. You know, I'm not even getting a whole bunch of confirmation of how long he could be out. So I don't think you can count on him to start this series, but I have no information that tells me whether or not we'll see him in game one or we won't see him again until they perhaps get to the next round of playoffs. That's just how limited the information has been when it comes to some of these injuries.
One of the nice things about Canucks polishing this off in game four, you probably got to watch the final round of the PGA yesterday.
Actually, I was on the plane. That's stupid me. I booked my flight like for 6:30, which is, you know, usually a really good time on the West Coast for major championship golf at night. But seeing as the tournament was on the West Coast, that didn't exactly suit my time frame. But I did come back and I watched all the highlights. I watched live from on the Golf Channel, and I was right when I got on the plane. I saw him chip in on 14, but right when I got on the plane is when he hit the tee shot to 8 feet on 16. And once he made that putt, it seemed like it was his tournament to win. But man, that's so impressive for a kid that's been out there for, what, 16 months, have 3 wins, one's a major, one missed cut. I mean, it's just these guys come out of college now, the top ones, and they can win right away. And he did last season. So did Wolf. But when you hear the players talk about Morikawa, they're like, we knew as soon as he came out that this guy was the real deal. And it was almost like, we told you so. Like, this was the guy to watch. And certainly that's coming true, because that's so, so impressive for a kid at that age to have this type of success already in one major in his pocket.
One of my favorite things of the entire weekend, though, was Brooks Koepka talking all that smack after round three, and then just lays a dud in the final round. Now, to his credit, he did talk about Dustin Johnson and how he only has one major, I don't worry about him, and DJ ultimately did not win. So it's not like Brooks was necessarily wrong, Murph, but I did kind of snicker to myself when this guy's talking so much. Like, he's letting out all the smoke, and then he's like two over for the round.
Yeah, I mean, four over the turn or something. I think karma came home to roost a little bit with him on this tournament. But I gotta say, I don't mind.
Right? No, I know.
That's what he's like. I don't mind that. I know it's not. It goes against all what we usually see in golf, and even McIlroy called him out a little bit on it. But Koepka doesn't care, right? He's said in the past, I don't even like golf. I wish I could play another sport. So he's a guy that's wishing he could play football or wishing he could play basketball, something that he could trash talk more, because that's more his personality. Now, will that go away? I don't know. He's called out Sergio Garcia multiple times. He's gone after DeChambeau a few times. And Dustin Johnson is supposedly one of his good buddies. They train together. Right. So if that's the way he tries to get in other players' heads, so be it. But maybe he was eating a little bit of crow after his front nine, especially yesterday.
Maybe Koepka's like the most relatable guy. I golfed yesterday, and it's the same thing. Like, walking up hole one, I'm like, I don't even like golf. I mean, why am I here? I just park one in the water. That's most people. You just kind of suffer through it for 18 holes.
Yeah, it's just kind of something. It's a way to walk and drink some beers, basically, at this point in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
Dan Murphy joins us on the program. Andrew Walker, Sat Shaw. Take care. We'll talk to you as soon as this playoff series gets going. You'll have to call in. We've been going late.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to it. I am home for this. I'm back in Vancouver for this series, and I should be going back to Edmonton in 2 weeks, regardless of what teams are advancing. But I'll be watching the games from my home, just like you guys.
Take care, Murph.
We'll be at the station.
Yeah, we'll be at the studio. See you later.